The very same people who say that government has no right to interfere with sexual activity between consenting adults believe that government has every right to interfere with economic activity between consenting adults. Welcome to Keith Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone and the Libertarian Institute. Today I have Isabella Riley joining me again. We're going to talk about the need for a libertarian conservative alliance. Ms. Riley, where is the best place to find your work?
You can find me on Twitter at Isabella Riley US, or if you happen to be on Instagram or TikTok, that's at Isabella Riley USA. But I'm definitely the most active on Twitter.
Let's talk about why libertarians should embrace conservative ideas. Why do you think that is, and what are some conservative ideas that libertarians should embrace?
Well, I think the only way that libertarians will ever have their ideas embraced in politics and actually see someone get elected is through, like, you know, either the Republican Party. I know there's a big, you know, debate going on because I think Dave Smith will be running for president, which is hard to, you know, as someone that believes what I believe, I obviously will have to support him. But I really do believe that the whole, like, populist movement and the conservatives and populist Republicans, I really do think that they offer a good avenue for libertarians to get their ideas, you know, to the forefront. Like, the whole, I think we could really unite around this good emotional appeal against the political elites and the elite class, the corporate press, as Michael Malice has coined the term, and, you know, the, you know, education system. I really think that appealing, like Rothbard has talked about this, how if you appeal to that emotional sense of people hating the elites, think that's the best way to get these policies, you know, popular.
Yeah, I definitely think it's hard to rally people when you're just against something. So when libertarians are for self-ownership and against some people initiating fraud or violence, that's all good, but it doesn't really give someone something to really dig their teeth into and believe in. So conservatives have tradition. They have the church. They have the family. All these great crutches, you could say, that people could rely on in the absence of there being a Leviathan state for people to believe in. Do you watch political rallies and say, I am watching a religious ceremony where people find their entire meaning in this person, or is that just me?
No, I totally agree with you. Especially with Trump rallies. I mean, the energy is and that's the best way to appeal to people, is make it a kind of a religious appeal. So I totally agree with that assessment.
Why do you think conservatives should embrace libertarian ideas?
Well, I really do think that, especially when you're talking about young people, it doesn't make sense for young people to want to be told what they can and cannot say, to be told what to do. You know, young people tend to be more extreme. And I do think that, individual liberty, personal responsibility message is very appealing to so many people. I truly believe that if you sat down and talked to most people, if you told them what libertarianism meant, that they would probably call themselves a libertarian. They just don't understand. And I also believe that many Republicans are really libertarians, but they don't know it yet. They haven't really recognized or seen how much a lot of the Republicans and conservatives really do want to increase the size of the state. They want the economy to be dictated by the state. They want, you know, most people just want to make their money, keep their money, and, you know, raise their family and spend it how they want. So I think it's just natural. We naturally want to not initiate force upon others. We don't want someone to initiate force upon us, and we don't want people to steal from us. So these principles are very easy and so easy to understand. You don't need to read a lot of political philosophy to understand these basic principles.
And how would you explain libertarianism to a conservative who has heard, like, things being associated with it, but don't really have a good understanding of it?
I would just, it depends on who you're talking to. I always like to kind of cater my arguments to whoever I'm talking to, but I would pretty much say, like, how annoyed are you at the corporate press and how they treated Trump and any Republicans and how they treat Biden and Kamala Harris, and they just willingly do whatever they want and they'll lie for them? How do you feel about the, you know, higher education system and public schooling overall? The reason why public schools are such indoctrination camps is because the government is the one controlling them. So what's the common denominator in all these problems? It's the government. So let's strive towards liberty. Let's let people make decisions for themselves. And that's how the best ideas win. You know, good ideas don't require force. So I would kind of say that. And then also, I do like something that Trump did that was amazing for the Republican Party, is really a trend towards being anti-war, wanting to bring the troops home. So that also that's a trend in conservatism that I feel like is very new, especially after 9/11. So I think that's a great shift. And it kind of shows that the Democrats were never anti-war. You know, they really, the elites and the establishment are pretty much for endless wars where we never win. We just have our troops there and it's constantly endless and we're just always losing, and it's just terrible.
And that was always the historical case. It's like World War One is Woodrow Wilson. The Second World War is Franklin Roosevelt. The Vietnam War is Lyndon B. Johnson. And Nixon runs on getting people out of it. So, the Democrats have always been the warmongers. As far as education goes, I see this is so big because conservatives, even Rand Paul, disappointingly, was saying things like, well, it's time to open schools back up. And I said, it's time to close them indefinitely. The point is that for everything that you're against the left doing and their takeover of these institutions, well, so much of it is done for 12 years when your brain is in like prime development mode. And this is where kids are getting their schooling. I can't even call it education because that's just too much of a joke.
Right.
When someone says, I'm having a kid, I already have to fund the public schools or they take my house through property tax legislation. What do you tell people who, or if you tell them anything, if they have kids and they don't want a public school and they're afraid of the kid not getting socialized properly, but they still want them to get an education? Do you have any advice for them?
So this is something I've thought about. If I were to ever have kids, I would never put them in the public school system. My parents always made sure that I went to a private Catholic school. And by the way, I'm an atheist, so it's not even like it's for the religion. It's the fact that it's the conservative values associated with going to Catholic school that they wanted. So we're not even super religious people. But I mean, something that if I were to have kids, I've even thought about this, how I don't even know if I want to send them to a private school. I mean, that's like the bare minimum. I would almost want to homeschool them or start like I know I'm such a classic libertarian, build your own, but I would almost want to like build my own sort of like homeschooling system with other moms and like where we could have the kids come and there's a community. So it's not just you're at home at school with your parents or whatever, but you have a community of people and you can really control the situation. That's what I would personally want. I feel like public schools are one of the biggest scams to exist in America right now. I mean, the fact that we're paying these people, these government schools to indoctrinate our children, it is a joke. It is completely a joke. And I completely agree with you when you say, you know, it's disappointing when you hear Republicans say like Rand Paul, oh, we need to open the schools back up. It's like, no, this is the one like good thing that's happened from COVID is kids are now back at home with their parents. And something that I've seen a lot of Republicans get mad at, I forget what official Twitter account, some official Republican Party account was like, oh, it's terrible how, you know, mothers are not at work. They have to stay home with their kids. And a lot of the traditional conservatives will say, no, this is great. The kids are at home with their mother, like how it should be. Like, not that they're saying you have to be doing that, but these are not, you know, values that we should be condemning. These are pretty natural things. And these are good things and letting kids be, you know, around their parents and not just indoctrinated by these government schools. So I think that really brings in the alliance between the, like the paleo conservatives and like the libertarians and the pop, you know, traditional family values. And the best way to fight against the state is by having strong nuclear families that build bigger communities that are good against the state, because what the state wants to do is they want to alienate you from your family. So you become married to the government. So, yeah.
Exactly. We see that all the time where if the state has a rule, but you're part of a community that has a competing rule. So if government has don't kill, don't steal, but you're part of a church where it says thou shalt not murder and thou shalt not steal, well, that's like, you know, the psycho ex-boyfriend who sees you talking to someone else who just flips out immediately. Someone's threatening the amount of power I have over you. It's almost exactly like that where, you know, you see Emmanuel Macron saying that we're going to have to consider outlawing a number of private schools and they need to get licenses from the state before they're allowed to teach anything because they're engaged in extremism. So, yeah, we see it all the time. But the numbers of things that I wrote down, the Fed devaluing the dollar certainly stops people from being able to purchase homes. They're not able to save and plan long term. So this hurts families. Schools are the biggest one, where instead of going to church, instead of being in a community, it's almost directly decided from D.C. because they decide all the credentials for what counts as a real university and what counts as having a degree. And then, of course, the welfare state, replacing mutual aid societies and voluntary churches. Anything else you have for conservatives and why they should consider libertarianism?
Well, I think you really bring up a good point with the family aspect. I think conservatives, especially the more traditional conservatives, the paleo conservatives, and even paleo libertarians, they really emphasize the importance of the family structure. So I totally agree with you where you say the state is what's breaking up these families. The state intervention with the welfare state telling mothers if you have a if you have a male in your house, a male father figure, even if it's not a father, then you don't get these tax breaks or you don't get, you know, benefits. So then it kind of incentivizes these mothers to be single mothers, and it promotes single motherhood. And not saying that I'm not against single mothers, but that's not really something we should be promoting. I mean, it's better for children to grow up with, especially if you're going to have one or the other, a father authority figure, but you definitely want kind of both in there. But they love, you know, the conservatives love the traditional family values. And I really think that showing them that through the libertarian principles of allowing you to make your own choices and keeping the government out of your lives and out of your family lives, that's the way to do it. Because it's really these, especially with schools, public schools, are indoctrinating the youth to hate, you know, their Republican family members, to hate them and call them dinosaurs and that they don't know anything. They're all old racist people and turning their kids against their own families. So you really show them the main problem, the prime offender in this situation is always the state. Then that's a really good way to convince them to come to our side. And also for libertarians, vice versa, you're not going to win unless you have form an alliance with one of the parties, right? And I don't see us forming, I mean, I'm not a woke Lowellberg, I'm not one of those libertarians, so I'm not ever going to form an alliance with the left. But the only way we're ever going to get our ideas out there and actually, you know, implemented is forming an alliance with the right. So yeah.
Excellent points. Let's go through what the Rockwell Rothbard report says are the 10 things that make paleo-libertarianism what it is. Briefly, paleo-libertarianism, with its roots in the old right, sees 1. The Leviathan state as the institutional source of evil throughout history. Comment on that for me.
Yeah, I mean, this stems back from Thomas Hobbes. And if you kind of read his writing about the Leviathan government, it's pretty creepy and how much like he's not even as bad as people are today, but you can really just see like this kind of mentality of the monstrous state. That they like it and that you need the state to control morals. And that's something where the conservatives might agree with them on, where they would want tax incentives for nuclear families, where I don't think it's the role of the government to tell you like what is a good family structure. So that's one thing that I'll disagree with my populist Republicans on. But I totally agree with that. The Leviathan state, I have it put up too, as a source of evil throughout history. I totally agree with that. The government, it does never solve the problem. It only creates problems, makes them worse. And the best way that any problems get solved is when the government's out of the problem. So especially when you see with COVID right now, it wasn't, you know, private businesses that chose to shut down. It was these like state and local governments that forced them not to stay open, that have to go through these mask mandates and all these terrible things. And now that we're finally seeing the governors and, you know, roll back these terrible unconstitutional mandates, you know, businesses are going to start booming again. You know, people can actually have some social interaction, which is another thing that conservatives are really concerned about, is, you know, the downfall of social in-person interaction. So that's another way we can say, hey, people weren't able to gather and socially interact in person because of the state, because of these local like and state dictators. So, I mean, that's just simple. And I think that's a great one to start out with for the list of 10.
Yeah, I also think conservatives don't take principles that or criteria that they have for the average person and apply them also to the state. For example, Sean Hannity had Penn Jillette on his show and he goes, you know what, I'm just not a really trustworthy guy. I think people are bad. I'm a Christian. I think people are born into sin. And that's why, you know, we need some sort of government. Well, the immediate follow-up is, what species do you want running the government? If you don't trust me in a free market to deal with you voluntarily, how could you trust me to vote for someone to impose myself on you? Or how could you trust me as a politician to make laws for your behalf? I don't think conservatives exactly know, or most people rather, don't know what they mean when they're talking about the state. They often refer to it as we, or like just another method of organizing. The economist from University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Murray Rothbard, summed it up in a book, Anatomy of the State. He said, briefly, the state is that organization in society which attempts to maintain a monopoly on the use of force and violence in a given territorial area. In particular, it is the only organization in society that obtains its revenue not by voluntary contribution or payment for services, but rendered by coercion. So when we say we're against the state doing X, we're not against that thing. We don't believe in state religion. Doesn't mean we're against religion. We don't believe in state monopolizing cars and computers. Doesn't mean we're against cars and computers. So when they hear something like, well, government should do A, B, and C, that's not us saying we should do it. It's saying one group of people, the state, should coercively fund and monopolize A, B, C, whatever you want to fill that in with. Is that just me, or do you see them actually not knowing what government really is?
I totally agree with you. And I think the conservatives, where they have like trouble, is they'll criticize the left for saying, you know, you should not, the government should not be able to tell us to do this or tell us what to say or whatever. But then conservatives will turn around and do the same thing. They want the government to implement their moralities. And I had like a tweet a while ago, and it was basically where I said, you know, most people would be okay with having a dictator as long as it's their own preferred dictator. So they're fine with having, as long as they're implementing what they want, then they're fine with it. But if you're a principled person, like the good libertarians are, you can. So how I look at politics and even treat people is always treat others how you want to be treated. And I always try to put myself in their shoes. So if, like, let's say, you know, would I be okay with the left doing this? Like, I always try to put myself in those shoes. And I feel like that's where a lot of people kind of fall flat, especially in terms of, you know, when the whole Andrew Cuomo, all the sexual assault allegations coming out, I tweeted out, you know, like, we have this thing called due process, and you're innocent until proven guilty. And that applies to people you don't like, because, you know, when everything about Cuomo comes out, you hear the Democrats, due process, all of a sudden they care. But obviously they don't care when it's like Bill Clinton or someone else from their side. So I think you really just need to apply the same principles in picture. Would you be okay with the other side doing this? So that's something I think conservatives definitely need to remember. I forget the main question now. I went off on a tangent.
You know what? It was just in response to, do they really know what they're saying when they say government should do X? What you're really saying is one group should coercively fund and monopolize X. But if you just see it as people organizing, then it's like, they imagine like you just walking into a supermarket and saying, everyone stop, this is terrible. Everyone has to do their own thing. Everyone needs to make their own stuff. They're like, they see libertarianism as people doing things by themselves, when it just means doing things voluntarily with consenting adults. So that I see as a rough hurdle for them. This sort of gets into, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, you're fine. I was just going to say, yeah, they totally don't see the state how for what it really is. They really don't. They truly, I think a lot of them do think, you know, Congress and stuff is made up of we the people, which I don't agree with whatsoever. But yeah, you're totally right. And I agree.
Point number two, the unhampered free market as a moral and practical imperative. What are your thoughts on the unhampered free market as a moral and practical imperative?
Well, obviously, free market capitalism is the only moral system, because it requires that every party is a consenting, and they're consenting parties, and they're voluntarily choosing to engage with one another. That's why capitalism is the only moral system. And it's practical, because obviously you're forcing people to do things, and, you know, there's only one DMV. We have no choice but to interact with it. We have to go there for anything involving our like license and driving, whatever. We all hate the DMV. And you want to know why? It's because there's no competition. There's no other option. And so I think Michael Malus uses this term. I may have said this in the last podcast, or this example, where he says, would you rather have, you know, someone evil in charge of like a big company like Walmart, or someone evil in charge of your government? And obviously you'd rather someone evil in charge of Walmart, because you could just go to Target. You could go to a different option. That's why the free market is inherently moral and practical, because it allows you to have choice. And also, when there's competition, it gives these companies and whatever incentives to actually improve their services, you know, lower costs, etc. So that's why it's the only moral and practical imperative. I totally agree with that. And it's so simple, but so true. And I wish more people understood that.
Now, people will often have very high standards for the free market. Anytime a company does something, I need to speak with the manager. I'm writing a letter. I'm writing a Yelp review. But government like commits the worst atrocities ever. And they're like, what are you going to do? No one's perfect. The state, you know, that things happen. But when it comes to not having moral standards, well, if you're not able to apply standards consistently, they're probably not legitimate. So if you say, you guys are always complaining about taxation, and gosh, it's sort of like you're materialistic and cheap and not spiritual and not enlightened. So all I ask is for them to give me 35% of their income in exchange for making more shows. Because, I mean, it's just taxation. I mean, don't be like a money grabber. And then certainly the Koch brothers and Amazon have the right to issue taxes so they can, you know, do what's best for society. I mean, there's nothing wrong with like taxation. You're just sort of getting something in return. And then immediately, once you take that principle and apply it to any other organization, they're like, oh, well, that's stealing. Of course it is for right. Everyone.
Right. But I guess stealing's only okay. You know, I think Rothbard or Rand said that, you know, the government, like the definition of the government or the state, is just legalized theft. Like, they can just legalize violence. They can I think it was violence that she said. I think it was, that was the exact term, but just legalize violence, which I totally agree with. So the government should not be able to do anything that we cannot do. Like, it's very simple. I don't know why that's like a controversial statement to say. You know, I'll sometimes talk about how, you know, I'm pro, you know, individual private citizens having nukes if the government's allowed to have nukes. Why should the government, like, I trust the government with nukes, but not me. The whole point of the Second Amendment was for us to actually like form a militia and be able to overthrow our own government in case it, you know, was being terrible, right? That was the whole point of the Second Amendment. It wasn't to go hunting. So yeah, if the government, we should have any weapons that the government, we should be able to get any weapons that the government has. So yeah.
Exactly. So if government gets its rights from us, and I don't have the right to tax, regulate, or own machine guns, how did I delegate that right to them in the first place? It's like, they're so fond of saying like, we are the government, we're going to fight for you in Congress. It's like, all right. So since government is us, the Capitol building basically belongs to us and we could go in at any time. No, we'll blow your head off and then pretend your death never happened. And we'll still be talking about George Floyd deaths before we ever mention Ashley Babbitt because she was a, quote, insurrectionist. It's like the American government, a government founded on violently overthrowing the British government, is against people going into the Capitol unless they're invited. Well, what the heck is this? Is a blatant double standard that they never address.
Right. I thought it was public property. I thought our tax dollars pay it. I thought that this is, you know, public property. Why aren't we not allowed to just go on there? Same with, you know, public parks. There's certain rules that you have to abide by. But I thought it's part like I partly own it. Because, but you don't. That's the thing is, and I think the government, they like to be able to let you know that you don't really own this. Or, you know, with a lot of people will make fun of libertarians for caring about like what color can you paint your house and these little things. But it's the principle behind it of them saying this isn't really your house. You don't really own this. You don't really own your car. You don't really own this. So that's the whole principle behind it. And for me, it's like no matter how big or small the issues are, it's the principles behind everything that matter.
Exactly. And you know, Obama was just saying again the other day that we're the government. It's like, okay, you have to know that this is wrong because you were the president of the government. So like you make executive orders, we have to obey them. Like, you know, the Gold Confiscation Act from FDR. One person gets to make orders and forces everyone to obey. These people have to obey. You can't think that those are the same thing. It's like, how often do people make executive orders and force the government to obey? Well, it's called terrorism. It's called using violence for political reasons. And you're called an insurrectionist and vilified for months on end, even though it was a mostly peaceful protest, voice of the unheard. They still have these totally different double standards.
It's very annoying. And it seems like it's such a minority of people that actually understand this. And it's sad and scary that, and I probably a lot of the problem is because of public school systems that yeah. you're just kind of like raised to think that the state and like the Congress and all these politicians are for the people. Your president really cares about for the people. And it's just, that's why the public schools is really, I truly believe they need to be abolished. I mean, it will never happen, but it's one of the worst things. And the consequences are obvious. You know, when you're raised in public schools to like, you know, I'm not someone that's like, oh, you must stand for like kneeling for the anthem is great. Like, I'm not for that, but I'm just saying it's kind of creepy. And Tom Woods has talked about this, how you kind of pledge allegiance to the flag to like a very violent government that you have. You know, it's just you're raised to just really like, you know, look up to and kind of idolize the government as like your God.
Exactly. And that, again, people would see it for how bad it was if everyone had to pay the Church of Scientology billions of dollars every year. And you have to go to either Church of Scientology school or one that has a license from the Church of Scientology. Well, what do you think would happen to the religion? Everyone's belief in it would skyrocket. Maybe not after one or two generations, but by third and fourth and fifth generation, there's like anyone who's not a Scientologist is a psycho conspiracy theorist at that point. So, of right. course, this is exactly what you're doing when you give the state the ability to have that much power.
And that's exactly why it's so important to tailor these arguments when you're trying to convince someone in like the most extreme way that that person would find insane, so they could really understand why that's insane. Like for the whole Supreme Court like cake decision, when you know this gay couple went to a bakery, you know, wanting to get a wedding cake for their wedding, and the bakery said, listen, and they actually like were seeking out a bakery to say no to them. They wanted this to happen. They wanted this big thing to happen. Whenever I try to talk to liberals about it, I'll say, well, would you want a Jewish bakery to be forced to serve a Nazi cake? And they're like, they're so like twisted that they will literally say, are you comparing gay people to Nazis?
Exactly. No. They don't even hear the words coming out of your mouth.
It's like talking to a wall. And sometimes I'm like, I'm wasting my breath, but you know, tailoring the making each example as extreme to like shock the person you're trying to convince is really helpful. Really helpful, especially with the Scientology example. I mean, I'm thinking about it, I'm like, that would seem insane, but that's exactly what's going on today. And we're just all like, okay with it.
Exactly. Point number three, God, we got to start getting through these faster. Point number three, private property as an economic and moral necessity for a free society.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically, it's simple as thou should not steal. I mean, you acquire private property based on what you've earned for your like hard work and labor. And you know, that's just essential. You don't want your stuff stolen. It's as simple as when you're a kid and you're taught, you know, you should not take other people's stuff. It's basically, it's simple, it's natural, it's part of human nature. And something I really can't stand is a lot of conservatives will say, oh, libertarians, you know, they only care about private property, which means that they're just so selfish, which is so, it's so stupid. You know, it just, why is it selfish for me to want to keep what I've earned, my property? Why is that selfish? And suddenly, you know, you say that private property is not that big of a deal. And I think you've said this before, maybe on the last podcast, where you're saying, well, the government's always saying that you don't need all this private property, but then they want part of it. Well, if it's not that, you know, essential, why do you want it? You know,
it's not that they just want it. They want trillions of dollars of it. They want more than any other who's second to the government? It's probably Walmart or Amazon, and they don't even break a trillion. And the government has 4.5 trillion they collect. And then they print another trillion, and they're like, oh, yeah, we just care about what? Spirituality, intellect, well-being? No, it's property.
I swear it's for the common good. It's not for anything else.
Point number four, the garrison state as a preeminent threat to liberty and social well-being.
So I actually don't, what does the garrison state mean exactly?
I can't believe I forgot to look it up because I even highlighted that word that I need to look, So as a preeminent threat to liberty and social well-being, well, of course, if some people have the right to rule over others, that is an immediate threat to your liberty, just as, well, before anyone makes a podcast, they just have to send it to me. I'll look it over and I'm going to regulate podcasts and make sure everything is good before I allow you to publish it. Well, what would that do? That would immediately decrease the number of people willing to spend time because for all they know, I'm just going to cancel all their hard work. This is no different than what the FDA does or OSHA or anytime you go to open up a business. And as far as social well-being, well, if you have one group of people making large-scale decisions, well, you have much less variety than you otherwise would. You have much less innovation than you otherwise would when you have to, you know, everyone has to go through the same path. What do you think about just the state being a threat to liberty as opposed to where we get our freedoms from and social being?
Well, I mean, when you're told what you can and cannot say and cannot do, it really just is on a personal level is very frustrating. I remember, you know, just in high school, our principal would always look over our Twitters. I actually wasn't allowed to have a smartphone until I graduated high school because my mouth always got me in trouble. But those sort of things always have just bothered me. I want to be able to say what I want to say. You don't need to agree with it. You can say whatever you want about it. But when you have these forces that are, you know, threatening free speech and telling you what you can and cannot say, it on a personal level, it's very frustrating. And it's either you just shut up and you kind of conform and just become someone you're not, or you're just completely ostracized. So that's obviously terrible and a threat to your social well-being. And obviously the state's a threat to your liberty. I mean, come on. I mean, I don't even know what else. It's so many things I could come up with. I mean, just things that, you know, if you're required to get a license to cut hair or do makeup, it's now you have to go through so much. You have to spend way more money just to be doing these services that don't require that. And, you know, even in, you know, especially states like New York and then in the city, the state has the monopoly on the taxes and they try to make it harder for Uber and Lyft to kind of thrive. Sorry, as there's like some annoying car driving by, but the state always just creates obstacles and hurdles for you to do anything. I know for my dad, he owns a small business and he says that the only reason he does not hire more people is because he knows he has to pay their insurance. He has to pay all these other things. And the only person he employs is his brother. And he was one time telling me how frustrated he was because he was giving him like a Christmas bonus and half of it had to go to the government. So just half it makes him not want to give him a bonus because if he just has to write a big check and half of it just go to the government. And I know he just had to write like a insanely large check for the government for the tax day. And it's just always a threat and it's always interfering. And just imagine how much better and everyone would be if the government just like, I've heard Ron Paul say this a while ago, but it was, you know, how we have a separation of the church and the state. We need that with the economy and the state, but really with everything. And that's why I'm like this close to being an anarchist. I'm not, There's a few things I'm not sure about yet, but I know you're a full ANCAP.
Let's just stick with paleo libertarian. Yeah. We're not even at five yet. So garrison is a noun meaning the troops being stationed in a fortress or town to defend it or provide a place with a body of troops. So I think what this is getting at is a police state is bad, I think is what they're more or less saying. So if you can imagine Russia stationing troops in America or China or England in the 1770s, well, you would immediately see that as one group attempting to coercively impose themselves and their legislation through troops in a foreign land. And all the power you give the state to fight the evils of everyone else is going to be used against you. Look, let's get the terrorists on the no-fly list. And then Nick Fuentes can't even go to Florida. And let me tell you, it's not stopping at Nick. Nick is not, he's not even as bad. I say Nick like I know him. Nick Fuentes is not even as bad as, I don't know, every congressman who supported the lockdowns or every one of them who supported the Iraq war, the Afghan war, secret missions in Syria to collaborate with Al-Qaeda to overthrow Assad, working with Al-Qaeda to overthrow Gaddafi in Libya. It's like these people are so much worse. So just giving them, just because they call themselves protectors doesn't mean they're going to protect you any more than government calling itself education is going to educate you.
Judge people based on their actions and not by their words. And that's also a great example of an alliance is, you know, people like Nick Fuentes, who are the people that are standing up for you and saying that this is ridiculous. It's going to be the pro-liberty libertarians. You know, a lot of conservatives may just think it's and think that's just a crazy thing that he's put on a no-fly list. And guess what? It started with Alex Jones and it trickles down to all these other people that are banned off all social media platforms. So that's another great alliance is, you know, the libertarians are the ones that are going to stick up for you for these things. It's not going to be Republicans and who are afraid to come out in support of you because it will sound like they're supporting you. It's the libertarians who don't care and that are principled and say, no, I don't care what you're saying. You should not be on a no-fly list. You're not a terrorist.
Yeah. And libertarians are the only people with a foundational objection to the left. So if you grant the state the right to rule and the right to issue large-scale taxes, the right to invade countries, and the right to regulate. Well, now you're just arguing over how much power the tyrants should have over you, and they're always going to have more ability to increase that, whereas your ability to decrease it is like, what, 1 in 300 million today? Not even that.
Anything, yeah. Yep.
Point number five, the welfare state as organized theft that victimizes producers and eventually even its clients.
I mean, exactly. Obviously, it's organized theft. I mean, the state is stealing your tax dollars and it's redistributing them to a bunch of other people that they think need it. It does victimize the producers. It also demonizes the producers because, you know, the people that receive welfare checks and receive state assistance, they see it as coming from the state. They don't really see it as coming from other people. That's why when you put the state in the middle, it kind of makes the entire situation like no longer a good situation. When you're voluntarily choosing to contribute to someone through charity or you know the person, you're way more likely to be thankful, appreciative, and want to pay it back. But when you just think it's coming from the government, which a lot of people just think it's coming from the government, they don't understand that it's other people's hard-earned money that is funding these things. Then they no longer are thankful and they're just, you know, these people will say, criticize all the old white men and all these rich people, but these rich people are the ones really paying so much in taxes to help you survive. So they're never thankful for it. And then also, yeah, it keeps people that are receiving the checks down. I mean, there's no incentive to actually get a job or make more money because I don't even know what the exact thresholds are. And I'm sure it varies from state to state. But as soon as you make so much over, like a dollar over whatever the amount is, you no longer receive the check. So it keeps these people incentivized to stay under this, to say like in the lower economic class. So they keep getting, because why would I want to work if I can just get a free check, you know? So it just keeps people down into a perpetual low economic status.
I think it does eventually hurt the clients. I mean, it's much like, well, if you want to help out a drug addict, and he says, I want money. Well, just give him money. Well, very often it's either, let's say, the drug habit or the bad money habits of someone that is their problem. And giving them more money is a bad thing because you're funding bad behaviors. Another reason that I know that Molyneux used to mention this, he said that a welfare state sort of turns people into jerks. So instead of, if I need help, I want to have friends. I want to know my neighbors. I want to have family members that like me and value me and are willing to say, hey, please come over to my house. You can stay on my couch for as long as you need. after a couple weeks, you're going to have to find a job. But until right. then, you're not going to starve. You need to have 10 friends like that. Or, you know, Tucker Carlson says, you know, it's not 330 million people who are going to be there for you when you need them. It's like 6 to 8 friends. And that's that true. Is really important yeah. when most people live so much of their lives on social media, which, of course, I'm addicted to. The point is you use it to assist the rest of your life, not be a, what would you call it, a replacement for actual human interaction.
Right.
Point number 6, civil liberties based on property rights as essential to a just society.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes back to private property rights as being, you know, thou should not steal, you don't want your property taken from you. And I think that really is the basis and the foundation of all civil liberties. So, I mean, even if you think about, you know, if you're sued for something or you have to, or the government, you know, cop pulls you over for speeding and just all the like amount of your own private property that you have to use, like fight that case. And, you know, all these people like Roger Stone, who had to, you know, sell his house and everything and pretty much is, you know, broke now just fighting the state. That's a huge part of it. I don't know if that answered the question. I'm trying.
Yeah. As far as civil liberties based on property rights as essential to a just society. So, if people have the right to their own bodies and any property they justly acquire, on a larger scale, you're producing a character of a nation that says, if I want to succeed, I need to act with people voluntarily. So I can't get a dime out of their pocket unless I create something that they want or a service that they want or a product. I can't have someone spend 1 second of their time unless I'm somewhat enjoyable to be around. So as far as a just society existing, instead of people winning at the expense of someone else, you create this harmonious relationship between everyone. So yeah, I think that's totally right. Granted, I could be misusing all of these, but that's sort of just what I'm getting. Anything else on civil liberties?
Yeah, I would just say what you just said is why capitalism is like the only moral system is because both parties, all the parties are consenting, they choose to be there. And that's like one of the biggest myths about capitalism is a lot of the leftists will try to say that capitalism is these, you know, big corporations, like the people of the CEOs are winning at the expense of their workers. No, the workers are choosing, they agree to these wages for their amount of labor that they're offering. They agree, both parties agreed to this and consented to this arrangement. So it's not winning at the expense of others. It's both seeing a value and mutually agreeing to participate together. So
exactly. Yeah. That's just more divisive nonsense that the left pushes. It's like saying these goddamn consumers, they only come to my business because they want the property that I have and they don't like me for me. They just want my products and my services and my stuff. Well, yeah, they do. And the employees are only there for the money and you're only there for the money. So everyone who is just there for themselves ends up engaged in this harmonious interaction where everyone's benefiting both themselves and they're benefiting others because people have the right to opt out if they don't think it's benefiting them. So, I totally agree with that. Point number 7, the egalitarian ethic as morally reprehensible and destructive of private property and social authority.
So yeah, the whole egalitarian ethic is really, as he says, or as they say, very immoral, because first of all, we're not all equal. No one's equal to each other. We're all individuals. So I call myself like a radical individualist. I don't, just because someone else is a girl doesn't mean I agree with them on anything. You know, these things don't matter. So the idea that we're all, and they don't really want us all to be treated equally. They want us all to become equal. They like the communism, like they want us all to become one and there's no differences. And you even see like this kind of principle apply to things like sexual assault. Before you'd think like they now are calling like a guy attempting to kiss a woman that she doesn't want to kiss him as rape. Like they'll kind of, they want everything to be the same and they don't want to have a different scale on things. So yeah, it's pretty much, and it's antithetical to human nature, the idea that we're all completely equal and especially trying to get equal outcomes. That's the whole equality versus equity thing. So, and it's obviously destructive to private property because if you're trying to make everyone equal or, you know, have the same outcome, you have to steal tax dollars from other people to give it to these people that don't make as much money. So that's obviously destructive to private property and social authority. I mean, it just kind of, that one, I'm not sure. I'm trying to think, do you have an example for that? I'm trying to, social authority.
Well, just as far as the egalitarian goes. So they'll say like, we need things to be equal. It's unfair that this person earns so much more than this other person. So the state should coercively take from one and give to another. Well, talk about unequal. I have to get everything voluntarily, which I think is good. But this group has no standard like that at all. That is the most unequal thing ever. It's not just that they get $4 trillion. It's that people don't get to opt out of giving it to them. And they can impose regulations coercively that no one consents to and no one contracts to. It's the state and the citizen is the least equal relationship that ever exists. So for egalitarians to believe in any kind of initiating aggression, I think is just incredible. So Rothbard actually had an example in a book titled, I think it's Egalitarianism as a Revolt Against Human Nature, where he says, well, we can see why tyrants do this. And it's almost weird. It's like, why do the people, the CIA, the FBI, talk about diversity and inclusion? The wealthiest people on the planet, they're the least equal. And he said that he thinks they do it because it's unachievable. It's impossible to achieve because there's the day two problem. If everyone has exactly the same amount of money on day two, some are going to save it. Some are going to spend. Some are going to spend a lot. Some are going to spend a little. And within 2 weeks, no one's going to be equal to anyone else because people make different decisions. So because it's unachievable and undefinable, you can always point to an example of inequality existing at any time in any society. And I think this is Jordan Peterson's great contribution, where he says, anytime people want to do something, let's say make or write a book, some people are going to be better than others. You immediately have a hierarchy. Some people are going to be better speakers. So you're going to have a speaking hierarchy. What percentage of people are as funny as Jerry Seinfeld or have as good a singing voice as Celine Dion? Well, right. So few. So the good thing to do is let people flourish and allow that very talented person to cooperate with everyone voluntarily so they could reap the benefits from everyone's talent.
Right. And the whole, what you were saying a little bit before is when you're trying to achieve egalitarianism, and why these tyrants like to use it is because they can't, you know, you never can achieve it, and you can't, and it's very like ill-defined. It's, you can't really point to it. It can be anything. And that's always just a great excuse and justification for more state power. So
as far as social authority goes, I think as far as believing that only the state can, only the state has the democratic vote, therefore they are the monopoly of authority within a certain region. So a social authority would be your friends, your parents, your family, your church, your mutual aid group, your book club, your philosophy club, anything that competes with their monopoly on authority. So having an egalitarian ethic is to say that, oh, okay, here's an example. An idiot posted, I might be in the minority here, but if I give a homeless person money, I don't care what they do with it now that it's theirs. That is a totally leftist egalitarian thing to say, because anyone, you know, who has objective standards would say, if you spend it to get a suit and from Goodwill and a bus ticket to a job fair, that's a good thing. Black tar heroin, beer, cigarettes, that's a bad thing. So only a leftist, and this got 5,000 likes on Facebook, which I know is not that much, but the fact that there's 5,000 people out there that don't have a preference for how someone without a house would spend their scarce dollars is just ridiculous. So if you're an egalitarian, there's no difference between spending money on meth, saving money to build a family and start a business. Everything's equal. Anyone who can, you know, weigh things proportionally would see church, family, good. Drugs, laziness, eating Doritos, bad.
And that's another way that there's an alliance between the paleo conservatives and a populist or populist Republicans and paleo libertarians. That's another great alliance there.
Point number eight, social authority as embodied in the family, church, community, and other intermediating institutions as helping to protect the individual from the state and as necessary for a free and virtuous society.
So we kind of touched on this earlier, but I remember reading a while back how the founders really thought, like, they really stressed the importance of the nuclear family as, and then a bunch of nuclear families coming together and building a community as being a way to kind of a defense against the state. So, I mean, we've pretty much covered this, I feel like, before, but yeah, when you have a family that you're really close with and you're not married to the government, you're more likely to have it's a good way to combat the power of the government.
Point number nine, Western culture as eminently worthy of preservation and defense.
Yeah, I mean, the Judeo-Christian values that this country was founded on, and, you know, I'm still an atheist, but I can appreciate the Judeo-Christian values. And you clearly can just see how, you know, women, there's no other countries that except in the Western countries and the Western culture that let women be as equal to men, that are as accepting of, you know, the people that are gay and other, you know, transgender rights and, well, not rights, but just issues and all of that. So it's funny because it's always a leftist that will promote, you know, all these different cultures, like, you know, China. I mean, I don't know if they're promoting Chinese culture, but they'll promote things like Muslim culture, which is pretty, you know, sexist. They want women to be completely covered up. And they also, you know, aren't they, isn't it illegal to be gay? Like, they'll throw gay people off buildings or something.
Oh, like, yeah. That, if you just research homosexuality legislation in the Middle East. Yeah. And women have to have headscarves. Well, right. Then again, in America, they have to have face scarves, depending on what your governor says. So we're going in the wrong direction there.
Yeah, that's a good little connection. I didn't even think about that. But right. So, I mean, Western culture is the by far the best culture for equality in the good, in the right sense, not, you know, equity in the leftist sense.
I've heard philosophers say that doubt is what makes the West great. So starting from Socrates, instead of blindly accepting that which is tradition, as you would in, say, Islam or China or something like that, what makes the West unique, while, of course, it still has terrible things, every other culture has terrible things too, so that evens out. What makes it unique is the idea that Socrates would have doubt as to what was widely accepted as conventional wisdom, so he would ask questions, and that is today why we have free speech, instead of just government gives us the correct speech. This right. way everyone talks correctly. Well, you don't know what's correct. That's the same reason you need private property and not a monopoly state deciding everything, because you might not have the best way of doing something. You might not have the right ideas. So you need freedom because you have doubt that one central authority can bestow, you know, greatness upon the land.
Right.
Point number 10, finally, objective standards of morality, especially as found in the Judeo-Christian tradition, as essential to the free and civilized social order. What are some of the greatest contributions you think Jews or Christianity have given to civilization?
I mean, just like the Ten Commandments, for example, I mean, they just make sense. I mean, I'm someone that I don't need to like see a list of Ten Commandments to understand thou should not steal, thou should not kill, but just these moral frameworks that I think are essential and just, you know, they just make sense with the human nature. Also, the importance of family values and, you know, getting married and having kids and just raising them that way. So I really do think that, I mean, as you can see how the Judeo-Christian values have really manifested in Western countries and why we are, like we were just saying, more equal than all these other, especially more Muslim countries. So yeah, I don't know. Do you have any examples of what you think are the greatest contributions?
So as far as building a collective identity, that is not the same as everyone's always equal. It means we all have something in common that we can sort of touch upon and recognize people as sort of extensions of ourselves and seeing them as someone worthy of rights, someone worthy of being respected and treated as an equal, so they can have the same thing with you. So if you almost just by wearing the cross or going to the temple, you're signaling to others, we have something in common. And this allows people to sort of let their guard down. There is a difference between individualism, rights not to be initiated violence against, and then people doing stuff by themselves. I think what a lot of people hear when they say you don't have the right to initiate violence is everyone does their own thing. And I already mentioned it in the economic realm, but in the social realm too. And they are certainly right in the sense of people trying to find meaning on their own without that group, without being given an identity to feel like you have meaning and you're part of something bigger. I could see that being the main cause of a lot of the depression and high suicide rate that we are experiencing. Granted, Japan has the same thing, so might be an outlier. I might be full of nonsense. I'm not sure. But as far as, I mean, if you don't have a large family or a big community to really lean on, any of your shortcomings are not likely to be genuinely praised. And whenever you face a problem that you fail at, all the responsibility is yours. You have no one to lean on. You have no one to crutch on. So, yeah, I think Judaism and Christianity are certainly net benefits. Any final claims on why libertarians and conservatives should form an alliance?
I'm not sure I have any more. I think I said everything that I could think of. Do you have any more? I'm trying to think.
Nothing else. I'm totally out. Miss Riley, thank you so much for your time. You said Twitter is definitely the best place. Are you backed up on any alternative media?
I'm on Gab and Parler. I don't use it ever, but I probably should be. But that's, I think it's Isabella Riley USA on those. So everything is Isabella Riley USA besides Twitter, because it's one letter too long. So on Twitter, just Isabella Riley US.
All those links will be in the description below. I tell people, definitely get subscribed on Gab and Parler, just so you're diversified. So even if you never use those until you're banned from Twitter, once you're banned, you have a few hundred people who at least are able to hear your voice, and you can, I don't know, start a different Twitter account, or maybe Gab will be much more popular by then. Miss Riley, thank you so much for your time, and thanks to everyone for watching Keith Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone, and the Libertarian Institute.
Thank you so much for having me on.